You speak of shocks to the economy. This is my second time around in Kamloops when I came here, like I said, a year after you did. Mm-hmm. My first time around was in the middle 60s, and I'm going to say 1966. There were five pulp mills here.
Okay.
All of them went on strike at the same time. They were on strike for about a year, almost a year. And Victoria Street was just like a ghost town. During that time, nobody had any money. There was a big Marshall Wells store on Victoria Street. That boarded up. A lot of these bigger stores boarded up. But you know what? The mom and pop stuff. They sustained themselves. They got wise, didn't get stupid with money or any crazy situations. They survived, and Kamloops came back.
Yeah, that's an interesting example of the importance of small businesses. When we hear about cities wanting to develop and wanting to attract big corporations to come in and provide jobs, you know, it always sounds powerful and like it's going to have a larger impact because a company's going to come in and they're going to hire 100 people or 200 people. But the reality is that, geez, I can't remember the figure, but it's close to about 80% of employment is created by small businesses.
Yeah.
You know, so small businesses really are the mainstay of the economy.
And we have a big company moving into Aberdeen Mall very soon. I can't remember the name of the company right now, but of course, with them being new to our city, jobs will come of that. But, you know, I'm thinking as I'm listening to you, Laura, the generations are different from each generation to the next. Now we're into the millennials, and I think even that's starting to be phased out a little bit. You know, the millennials I'm going to use because they really do get a bad rap. They get a rap of being, you know, I want to finish grade 12 or whatever, skip university, and be CEO of a big company the next day. You know, they don't want to work for it. They want to just have things given to them. That's the rap for the millennials. And I guess you're kind of running into that, too, through some of your research.
Well, that's the rap. And I think, I think there's being sold short, actually.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, like if you think probably, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, I think back then people were talking about a younger generation being lazy and spending all their time watching TV, you know.
That was party
right?
time.
Yeah, exactly. We have a lot of very bright students at TRU that are very ambitious and hardworking, and I think they're going to lead us quite nicely into the next.
You professors are very, very lucky at TRU in that you have a huge international population up there, and you're learning from them.
Yes, we're learning from them, and the students are learning from each other. I believe that international students make up, I think, more than 10% of the total student body, and in the School of Business and Economics, it's about 50%.
Wow.
International students tend to be drawn towards a School of Business and Economic programs more often. And talking to the students and seeing the exchange based on their different cultures and backgrounds between the students is fascinating. Yeah,
what about the language barrier? You know, they have to learn how to speak English, and of course, in turn, the English-speaking students would love to speak the other person's language.
Well, they probably would, but all the students that arrive, and in order to take the academic courses, have to have an English second language level beyond, you know, beyond a stated threshold.
Yeah.
So some of the students will come in a little bit lower and take a couple years of ESL before they're ready for the academic programs. So the conversations in the classroom among the students are all in English, although you hear the little subgroups talking in Saudi or Chinese or Indian.
I'm thinking sports figures when they get traded to a team from, say, Russia or someplace that can't speak English.
Right.
You know, that locker room must be interesting. Researching CED issues relevant to Kamloops, anything else that comes to mind?
Yeah, yes, I've done a few studies and been involved in some research specifically related to Kamloops. One of the most recent research was by an MBA student who I supervised, and she was looking at the high-tech sector in Kamloops and specifically interviewed owners of high-tech companies in Kamloops, wanting to know why they are located in Kamloops.
Good question.
We typically think of the IT sector as wanting to be in downtown Vancouver, where it's vibrant, lots of hustle and bustle. But she found out some really interesting, some really interesting findings, and the findings are quite complementary to Kamloops. That the top reason for these IT companies locating in Kamloops is lifestyle and quality of life.
Wow.
Yes.
That's neat.
Yeah. So other things were that they were that Kamloops was the hometown, so a number of these companies are started by people who already lived in Kamloops.
Todd Stone bought iCompass a number of years ago, brought iCompass to Kamloops, and just in the last few days has sold it to an American concern with a promise that iCompass stays in Kamloops. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah, that is neat. The cost of doing business is generally considered lower here. You know, you think about the cost of rent and things like that. And a lot of people, they find Kamloops to be very family friendly. So at one time, it was all about costs when you thought about locating your business. But the whole idea of quality of life and lifestyle has become very prominent in deciding where you want to locate a business. And for anyone that's interested in the outdoors, for people with young families, all the amenities here, it's a very desirable place. So I would expect the high-tech sector here to grow.